is how does someone become a better teacher of the game?
Oh, wow, that's another big question. First of all, hello, Catherine. I do remember you well. It's hard to forget a three-time grad. How does one become a better teacher? You know, that's a, you know, one of the things that I have found in all of my years of being around basketball is, first of all, there's a lot of great teachers out there at every level. And, man, in my experience, 99 times out of 100, great teachers, they love to help younger coaches or younger teachers. Sometimes you just have to ask. You know, I think that's the best way, is to find someone who's already great at it, that's been doing it for 20, 25, 30 years, and go spend time with them. Go start an email relationship with them. Go ask if you can go watch their practices. See if you can sit down with them in their office, you know, for half an hour and just ask whatever questions you want to ask. See if you can shadow them, you know, can I sit in on your coaches meetings? Can I sit in on your practices? Can I sit in on a film session with you? Can I watch a, you know, can I sit with you while you watch a game tape of your team from last night? There are so many great coaches out there who aren't just great coaches, but they're great people. And you know, one great example, because I know a lot of people on our call will be familiar with him, is Bobby Starkey, formerly from LSU. I know he's been on one of these calls. You know, he's one of the greatest minds in basketball, but what a lot of people don't know is he's also one of the most generous, in terms of sharing his knowledge, one of the most willing, one of the most generous with his time. He loves to talk hoops with younger coaches, and he loves to help younger coaches, and he loves to just talk the game with other people that care about it and love it as much as he does. And so there's other Bobby Starkeys out there at every level. And so I think the best and most effective way to become better is to just spend time with people who are already doing it well. And I think a lot of times it's just a matter of asking, and showing a genuine interest in wanting to get better. And what I've found is that most great coaches are more than willing to share their time. So that's what I would say, Catherine.
I think it's great insight, and I appreciate you sharing. I just had two coaches chime in saying, you know, it sounds simple, yet few people do it, and I'm starting to make a list tomorrow of people that they want to reach out to. So
exactly, and you know, it's the same thing I tell players. You know, being special or being great is just being willing to do over and over again things that are very easy to do every once in a while, and it's just, you know, I say all the time, it's not rocket science. You don't have to be an extraordinary person to be extraordinary. You just have to have habits that are different than most other people, and none of them are hard. It's not hard to send a coach an email. It's not hard to ask a coach if you can come watch his practice. It's not hard to pick up the phone and call a coach and have a 10-minute conversation with him. But, you know, most people just don't do it. But, you know, again, in my experience, you know, most really great coaches are more than willing to help and to have those types of conversations with you.
Awesome. And then I'm going to ask a second question. She emailed earlier in today, and that was, she spoke, you know, I've seen what the positive energy from shaping a gym session can do. And she says, you know, this is what I'm seeking to develop in position work with my post players at practice. How do you recommend keeping the energy and intensity up at a basket amidst the inevitable process of explaining, correcting, and answering the player's questions, so that fine balance of teaching while continually shaping the environment?
Well, I think the key is, as a coach, if you're the one that's bearing the responsibility for making your practices spirited and energized, there's no way you can maintain that. I think the key is you've got to empower and teach and give that responsibility to your athletes, and you've got to hold them accountable for that. Now, of course, first you have to teach them. You have to tell them what that means and what does it look like to have spirited practices. And, you know, it's kind of like what I said about communication. You can't just tell them, hey, be spirited. You have to tell them specifically what that means and what you're looking for and what you're asking for from them, which is something we do a lot specifically in our Think the Game program. What is it? How do you create a spirited practice? you know, for example, we challenge the athletes at Think the Game, even just in our gym sessions at Think the Game, after we've talked about this for a long time in class, we challenge them to, hey, see if every gym session you can make it a goal to say at least two positive things a minute. So something as simple as that, just, you know, and when you've got, you know, 12, 15 athletes in a two-hour practice, you know, sprinkling the air with positives, you know, two things in a minute is not very hard. You know, Lindsay, good pass. Steph, great rebound. You know, I just said two things in 2 seconds. You know, but if you multiply that, you know, by 2 hours, that's, you know what, 240 positive things that come out of your mouth. And then if you multiply that by 10 other players on the team, you know, that's almost 2,500 positive things that are coming out of your team's mouth that are getting vocalized in your gym in 1 2-hour practice. And that's just, you know, one example. That's just one way to bring spirit and energy and enthusiasm and a positive vibe to your practices. But my point is as a coach, there's no way you can create that and teach fundamentals and teach X's and O's and teach your out-of-bounds plays and teach your press breaker and teach all those other things that you have to teach. So, you know, one of the things that I always like to say is, you know, you can feed a player a fish or you can teach your players to fish. And when it comes to having spirited practices, you've got to teach them how to create that, and you've got to put the responsibility on them. Because if you're the one that's trying to bring that spirit and enthusiasm every day, first of all, you're just one person and there's a lot more of them. And secondly, you know, that's not really your job. That's the player's job to bring that. So to educate them and to empower them and to encourage them how to do those things, and then to hold them responsible for doing those things. And then I think that frees you up to coach, to teach. And again, to not have to carry the burden of all the intangibles on your team. And again, you know, I can even hear some of the coaches out there like, how in the world am I going to have time to teach all that? You know, I only have a certain amount of time with my team, and we got to get our out-of-bounds plays in. We got to get our press breaker in. You know, I got to teach my big guys how to catch and drop stuff and score. You know, I don't have time to teach all that stuff. And frankly, that's a really good point. And that's why, you know, I like point guard college, because I think, you know, in 5 days, if you've got the kind of kid that wants to learn those types of things, I think if they spend that time with us and they apply themselves in the time that they're with us, most of the time we can send them back to you knowing a lot of those things, and being able to help you coach your team better because they know some of those things. But the bottom line is, you know, as a coach, you can't expect to take the responsibility for all that and have it be sustainable.
Mm-hmm. I think it's a great point, and I appreciate you answering that question. Another one came in, and this is from a gentleman named Jesse, and he asked, any advice on how to connect with an unmotivated player who has a whole bunch of potential? And this is actually the second question I've got, or I've received, around just motivating players, and sort of your general or the general PGC basketball philosophy behind that.
That's a tough one, you know, especially without knowing a lot of specifics. I think that, you know, the best coaches that I've played for, the coaches that I played for that have made me want to run through a brick wall for them, were typically the ones that I had the most respect for and the ones who were able to connect with me as a person, and didn't just treat me, you know, kind of as a cog in the machine. And again, I know that's a lot, it sounds easy when someone says it like that, it's a lot more difficult. But what I've also learned, having worked with 10,000 athletes over the years, is, you know, once again, you know, you can only take someone so far. You know, it's the old saying, you can lead a horse to water, but you can't make him drink. And I think, you know, you have to do your best with those players. You definitely have to, you know, find ways to try to connect with them and find what makes them tick, and also try to educate them. Again, I go back to the vague coach speak. You know, sometimes players come across as unmotivated and like they don't care, but it's just a front because they don't really know what to do. They don't know what working hard looks like specifically. They don't know what hustle looks like specifically. If you just tell a kid to hustle, well, you know, especially if they've grown up in an environment where they've never seen an example of hustle, either on or off the court, you might as well, you know, be throwing a foreign language at them. They don't even know what that means. And so I think coaches, first of all, have a responsibility to communicate with language and with specifics that tell the kid behaviorally exactly what you want them to do. So I think that's the first piece, is you got to at least do your best to give them that. But at some point, you know, if you've done all that and you've done the best you can do with that, and this has certainly happened to me at Pointer Cause a number of times, and even with players I've worked with individually, you know, even doing all that, you know, sometimes that works, but sometimes there's still players that you just can't get it out of no matter what you do. And, you know, I certainly don't think you ever give up on those guys and you ever write them off, but I also don't think that you can afford to let, say, 90% of your energy and attention go to that one kid when maybe you've got 9 other guys on your team who are dying to do exactly what you're wanting them to do, and they're dying to do all the things that you want your players to be and to do. Sometimes I think that coaches let those really unmotivated kids suck up too much of their energy and attention. So it's a fine line. And again, I'm not trying to make it sound easy. I think coaching is one of the toughest jobs in the world, because you do have to be part psychologist and, you know, part mom or dad, and in addition to being a teacher and a coach and all the other things that you have to be as a coach. So I by no means want anyone to think that I think that this is an easy question to answer or an easy question to deal with. It's certainly not. But I guess what I would just offer up is just make sure you're not just using coach speak with those types of players, because sometimes it's not that they don't want to do it. It's just that they really don't know. And then the words that you're using that make sense to you might not make sense to them. And so just really use specifics and stay away from vague coach speak.
I love the term coach speak, and I know one of the pieces of feedback that observing coaches have given us over the years, you know, the coaches who attend our programs and participate along with the athletes and through the program, has been that PGC has been a place where they've established their coaching lingo and language that goes above and beyond exactly what you've been saying with the coach speak. So I love that term, and I appreciate you sharing that.
Yeah, and I think, you know, I just want to give credit to Dick DiVincenzo for most of that. You know, just a master of the English language. His degree at Duke was in English, and he never published, but he wrote literally hundreds of novels over the course of his life that weren't at all even related to sports or related to basketball. And Dick was such a genius of the English language that I think that's what made him such a great teacher. One of the things that made him such a great teacher is he just learned to say things in ways that were memorable. Like, just to throw out a couple of examples, I don't want to talk too long because I want to get to some more questions, but, you know, just something simple as, you know, we use the word peek, you know, to peek at the rim, P-E-E-K, and that was one of the words that Dick used, as opposed to, you know, most coaches will say things, you know, square up or look at the rim or, you know, and all that makes sense. It's English, everybody understands it, but there's something about that word peek that's vivid. It's almost visceral. It's memorable. And so at PGC, I've tried to hang on to as many of those words that I learned from Dick and that Dick kind of introduced, even some of them that Dick invented. You know, we try to hang on to as many of those as possible. And one of the things I do for the last 10 years, I listen for those words. You know, like I gave the example of Skip Prosser, and he used the phrase meaning to talk. The phrase greedy receiver, you know, I got from Kelvin Sampson a number of years ago. You know, you can say, you know, be ready to catch the ball or be ready to shoot or act like you want it. You know, that's an example of coach speak. You hear that all the time. But to say be a greedy receiver with itchy fingers, you know, which is the term we used at PGC, man, it's so vivid. It's so visceral. And you just hear it one time. As a player, you never forget it. And, you know, there's hundreds of examples that we try to use at PGC that I could rattle off. But again, my point is the more you can get away from vague coach speak, it might be something that you've heard your whole life, but that doesn't necessarily mean it's the most effective way to communicate it. So yeah, to that point.
I wholeheartedly agree there. Another question, this one came in from a gentleman named Sean, Coach Tolliver, it looks like, and he asks, how do you get your players to understand that even though they aren't designated leaders, they are still leaders?
Mm. That's a good point. I mean, these are all questions that are impossible to answer in a short sound bite. I mean, these are all questions of great depth, and, you know, I have such a great appreciation for our coaches that participate in these calls and that come to our sessions because they're asking all the right questions. My short answer, Sean, my easy answer is to say send them to one of our Think the Game programs, because I think that's really where we put the most emphasis on teaching players what it means to lead, and that you're always leading, and that even to be a great leader, you have to learn to be a great follower, and what does that mean? So that's my simple, easy answer, and, you know, we spend 5 days trying to teach that to athletes, so, you know, I feel a little intimidated trying to answer such a great question in a few seconds. Obviously, I can't, so I don't even know that I want to try without taking up too much more time. But it's certainly a great question. It's certainly, I think, being able to teach your players that you all have a responsibility to, you're all affecting this team. We all have a responsibility to shape this practice or to shape this drill. You know, even if you're a player that doesn't get to play a lot and you're sitting at the end of the bench most of the game, or if you're just sitting there doing nothing, chances are, instead of contributing to our environment, you're contaminating our environment. So what can you do to contribute to the team? Well, you can give reminders. You can give encouragement. You know, you can make sure to high-five somebody when they come out of the game. You can make sure to be the first person that jumps up off the bench in enthusiasm when someone hits a three-pointer or someone makes a good play. You know, just constantly be letting players know that, like Seth said, I always use the phrase, you got to hold people's feet to the fire. You know, it's never enough, even if you're the 12th or 11th man on the team. It's never enough to just be sitting there doing nothing or standing there on the sideline in a practice doing nothing. You know, you have just as much responsibility to shape this team and shape this practice as our best player, as our senior captain. So I think, again, just telling players that, but then also not just telling them that, but giving them specific examples of behaviors they can do to affect the quality or to affect the environment of your team.